Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Good to be with you, everybody. We're looking forward to this broadcast. There's so much information going on, and just want to say it's December 1st for those of you that are listening on a downloaded basis. It is Monday, December 1st. Happens to be my 30th wedding anniversary. How about that? Anyway, this is a broadcast created by mortgage professionals for mortgage professionals, and we're the proud recipient of the Innovation Award from Progress and Lending. Thank you so much, Progress and Lending. Also, today, the Hot Topics segment, we're going to be talking about the Wall Street article that was published on Friday, November 28th, just before, right there, kind of quietly slipped in there. And it's an article, and it is titled, has to do with all the talk about what's going on regarding mortgages. I'm trying to get over to the article. There it is. Okay. The headline of the article is titled, Mortgage Lenders Set to Relax Standards. Kicking off quite a lot of discussion in the press. Are we heading over the cliff? Are we setting this up? Well, we're going to be talking about that. David Stevens forwarded this article out to me over the weekend, and so we're going to be talking about it amongst the regulars, Alice, Joe, Andy. We got the Profit Doctor in the house. We're excited to have him back to join in on this discussion. Also, we got a full house. We've got Paul Malo, who's dialed in. He'll be with us shortly. We have Tony Garitano, Sam Garcia, of course, Alice, Joe, Andy, the full house. So we've got a lot to talk about and a lot of information. Special thank you goes out to our sponsors. I want to say a very big thank you to United Guarantee. In October, United Guarantee introduced Secure Cert, which is a suite of five options that allow lenders to choose the maximum rescission relief available, and it's at no additional cost. SecureCert has options that fit your business, including 12 to 36 month rescission relief, full file delegated submissions, day one protection. They have 12 to 36 month. Lots of protection in there, but no, it's effective day one. Choose the option that best fits your business needs and operational processes. For more information, head over to www.ugcorp.com. United Guarantee representative would be happy to discuss this with you. Look up who your local rep is. If you're not in relationship with a United Guarantee representative or their company, get a hold of their representative and set up a time. Great folks. Mortgage insurance underwritten by United Guarantee Residential Insurance Company. Also, a special thank you goes out to Velma, Virtual Electronic Marketing Assistant. They do a great job of sending out our emails, notifying people of our upcoming broadcast. But beyond that, they are just an outstanding electronic marketing service. I encourage you to check them out. The thing that I probably most appreciate about their service, of course, is the fact that they take such a personal interest. I see the effort that they go in to get our emails out. And I got to tell you, there's times I don't give them a lot to work with, and they somehow still get it out, and they do a quality job. Today was one of those times. Anyway, special thank you to all of our regular contributors, Alice, Joe, and Andy, Paul Malo, Tony Garitano, and, of course, Sam Garcia. Got the full house, so let's get into it. Only conference left this year is the one that's going to be going on this fine day, and many people should be there. It's getting cold across the country, so you could be either in your cold state or you could be at the Independent Mortgage Bankers Conference in Telldale in San Diego. And it's a beautiful conference. It's going on the 3rd of this week through the 5th. Great conference, and so many independent mortgage bankers will be there. Joe Farr, good to have you with us. Give us a quick update, a market update here, my friend. Oh, before you go there, Joe, can I say a big thank you to both you and Alice for doing an outstanding job of hosting the broadcast last week. You guys did a great job. Alice is dialed in there. And I just love the transparency, Alice. I'll talk about that when you're segment. But just want to say thank you to both of you. You guys did a great job. Good, Joe, thanks. Give us an update on the market.
Well, this morning we have been
either at or above where we ended the day on Friday until just recently. We've dropped, and we're now down 430 seconds. We just put out an alert that unfavorable repricing is possible. The because we're now about 730 seconds below morning pricing levels for some investors. So be on the alert for an unfavorable price change. A couple of things came out this morning, although the ISM index came out while we were close to the highs for the day, and it was a little better than expected and did cause a bit of a drop. And then after that, Fed Governor Dudley, in a speech, was fairly bullish about the economy, about the benefits that will come from lower gas prices. And so we've seen a bit of a drop this morning. But, you know, we had a long way to drop given how far we rose last week, and especially on Friday. I mean, it was a great week last week. MBS prices improved about three-quarters of a point during the week. More than half of that came on Friday alone. And we're near the best levels since May of 2013. You'll remember that was the month in which the Fed first sort of said, hey, we're gonna move toward the end of this QE, all the taper discussions that were going on at the time. And so, you know, so we're at the best levels in, you know, a year and a half.
Wow. This is going to be setting off for another refinance mania?
Well, you know, we might not have fallen enough to do a lot of that, but certainly it's going to make for a more favorable purchase market. Yeah, and we're witnessing low inflation. Weakness overseas is helping keeping inflation low, and that's helping to keep mortgage rates low. And that's in spite of pretty good economic data. Last week, we saw GDP revised to 3.9% from 3.5% for the third quarter. In addition, durable orders beat estimates, but most of that was transportation orders. New home sales remain near the highest level of the year. They weren't quite as high as people expected, but they still remain near the best levels of the year, as does consumer sentiment. So, you know, you got low rates, you got fairly optimistic home builders from a week ago, you got consumer sentiment high, you know, all that kind of bodes well for a good housing market. But now that I say that, pending home sales fell in October. So,
anyway, it was all good except for the pending home sale number. But is that seasonal, though? We're heading into it. We looked at seasonality, and I was looking at some information on calculated risk blog website, and you know, there's seasonality in prices and seasonality in volume of the volume numbers, and so I mean, that's got to be a contributing factor to that.
Right. Speaking of inflation, core PCE came out. It's only 1.6% on a year-over-year basis, so that's good. That's helping. Yeah, the biggest thing that might have came out on Thanksgiving Day, and it came out of OPEC, because there was big concern last week that OPEC may dramatically drop production in order to push prices higher, and they chose not to. And that was a big reason we saw the improvement we saw on Friday in MBS prices. So keep an eye on OPEC, because you know, there's a lot of good being attributed to low prices now and in the future. And if OPEC were to try to change that, it could have an impact on the markets. Looking at this weekday, we have ADP on Wednesday, but more importantly, ADP, jobs report on Friday, and unemployment rate is supposed to come out on Friday. Jobs are expected. The forecast is 230,000 net new jobs and no change in the unemployment rate. There's also an ECB meeting on Thursday, and the investor market's going to be looking for more guidance from the ECB on when and how much QE they plan to do. So it could create a bit of a reaction in the marketplace. In addition, you got construction spending, ISM services, factory orders all being released this week. So it could be a big week. Most of the attention will be focused, though, on the jobs report at 8:30 Eastern time on Friday.
Yeah, that's going to be the big one. See if unemployment has dropped at all. We've seen that just easing, getting better. One of the questions on the OPEC prices that I had for you, Joe, was I read an article that this is very strategic. In fact, one article I read said oil wars. I thought that was really an interesting title, caught my attention. And that OPEC is dropping the prices to discourage us from continuing to build out our own oil infrastructure, and then so they can come back and raise prices. So if they drop it below $70 a barrel or whatever the price is, which is the threshold, somewhere there's a threshold, not sure that I have that number right,
sure,
that it just doesn't make sense for us to do it, that we basically, they've declared war. Now, it's interesting that other parts of the world, they're raising, OPEC's raising prices, but here in America, they're dropping prices. really interesting. What's your thoughts on that, Ernie? Reflection.
Well, I think it's a natural reaction, but the question is for how long, and when it's able to be manipulated, it would seem like you got to expect that OPEC's not going to want to keep them low for long. But you know, there are CNBC news stories today on is this going to be the end of the Bakken, and you know, down here in South Texas, is it going to be the end of Eagle Ford Shell? I can't believe that it will. I think the U.S. continues to need to produce in order to require less from the OPEC nations, and I hope it doesn't drop production too much.
Yeah, I hope we do not see our own production or our own initiatives kind of drop, because we just got to get free from the OPEC overhang that sits there all over us all the time. Good information. Watching the markets, it continues to kind of trading and settling in at the bottom. Good stuff. We'll get an update from you towards the end of the broadcast, Joe, see what happens. But excellent stuff. Appreciate you so much. Folks, we're going to be right back after this brief break.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoteline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoteline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market, whether you're in the office or on the road. See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to MBSQuoteline.com to start a risk-free two-week trial. MBSQuoteline.com. 646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
And we are back with Paul Barlow, who writes the blog and contributes to the blog. He heads up the blog. Are you the chief editor? Is that the best way to refer to you, Paul? The chief? You're the blogster.
Yeah, I'm the editor of the Daily Beast, the Daily Mortgage Beast, IMF News.
It is good stuff. This is really so well written. My eyes were glancing over it. And again, I like your article that you posted here. I was reading it earlier. Mortgage industry braces for non-capital standards from state regulators. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, the Conference of State Bank Supervisors has been working on this for a while. From what we understand, Mortgage Bankers Association has been in contact with them, and they're working with them, trying to guide them through this, make sure they don't do anything to screw up their members. But, you know, they're going to put out some kind of recommendations on capital and servicing standards. The question is, the Conference of State Bank Supervisors, they're a trade group. Okay, so, you know, whatever they recommend to the states, you know, how binding will it be? What will the states do? And when you're dealing with 50 states, you know, what are you going to, you know, you have 50 sets of rules.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the fear. There's a bigger story in Inside Mortgage Finance, the weekly, and gets more into that. And that's the fear, how this thing is executed, how binding it will be. But, you know, there's a lot of concern. And I know there's a couple other trade groups besides MBA that are watching this very closely. And then, as we've reported before, the Federal Housing Finance Agency is working on some kind of capital standards for non-banks. I mean, that will obviously be binding because it will adhere to it will be for the Fannie Freddie seller services to adhere to, and you know how onerous is it going to be, how different it's going to be, is it going to change the playing field? You know, so this, you know, listen, when people start talking about regulation after we've had 5 or 6 years of it, you know, they get concerned. So it's a big topic.
Well, it's a big topic, and it's a great article. I think you did a great job, but so we don't focus just on that one. Give us a rundown of what's on the website. Folks, if you're not checking out this website, do so, www.imfnews.com. Let's do a run-through here, Paul.
Oh, sure. The lead story is by John Bancroft today. He's got he went through the servicing numbers as he does, the earnings numbers as he does every quarter. He tracks about 11 major lenders. And servicing income is down in the third quarter. That's not really that surprising because rates fell. There was hedging markdowns that had to happen. Their prepayments went up. Some lenders, servicers marked down the value of that asset. So that's not exactly surprising, but we put it out there because people like to see the numbers. And we have tables in one of our affiliate publications, Inside Mortgage Trends, on what the numbers are exactly.
Right.
So that's to watch. The big other story today, it's sort of big. The Ocwen saga continues. I didn't realize, but apparently the consent order that Ocwen signed with New York State 2 years ago expires on Friday. Now the question is,
oh really?
They had one tied to their fast growth, and people forget all the trouble they've been through. That, you know, 2 years ago they signed this consent order, and one of the main things it did, it created a servicing monitor inside the company from the NYDFS to monitor, you know, how they, you know, process late payments and a number of things. You know, I don't know what's going to happen on Friday. Maybe nothing. The thing could be extended. You know, but people are wondering, you know, is the big settlement coming? And that's the one that Ocwen said several weeks ago was going to cost them $100 million. So stay tuned. Something could pop this week on Ocwen. Their shares continue to suffer. Maybe that's not real surprising. But if you're an investor in Ocwen stock, and we've talked about this before, it's been brutal. When you lose 66% of your value, it's brutal. Trust me.
That's not a good day. So, not a good stock to own. Yep.
Yeah, and also on the website today, Goldman's out with a new jumbo deal. We had that late last week as the holiday was rapidly approaching. We provided some new details. One thing that's interesting about that, everyone knows it's Goldman's first jumbo deal since the crash, but the credit enhancement on the AAA piece was 8.35%. That's, you know, a little pricey, a lot pricier than some of the other deals we've seen. So we put that on the website. Fannie and Freddie's MBS volume was down significantly compared to a year ago, 50%. It wasn't down that much compared to the month before. And we also have a list of the top 100 Fannie seller servicers in one of our pubs. In short takes, we deal with Impact's got a new loan out there. It's called AltQM, and it's aimed at high net worth borrowers. And what they're doing, they're allowing for no calculation for the borrower's income. It's basically asset-based lending. So they want to see your bank statements, but, you know, they don't really care about your income. This is a jumbo product, and that's going to be interesting to watch to see how that takes off. We have some numbers we quoted from RealtyTrack about the fix and flip market that apparently is slowing down a bit. And, you know, anyone who's on this broadcast probably watches those cable shows like I do about the fixer and flipper uppers on the different. You know, I find those shows fascinating. I don't know why. But I know someone who actually I work with. Her husband's in the flipping market. He's a contractor. And she had warned me that, you know, some of these numbers you see on those TV shows about what it costs to renovate these properties are a load of bunk. So I always wonder how much, you know, in the last year or so, how much the profits are going down for these guys. And, you know, how much longer is it going to be feasible? I mean, all the easy money must be off the table. But you never know.
We've got some family that's in it pretty big, and they're doing fairly well at it. But, I mean, they do enough volume, and they also have connections of building supply companies. So, I mean, the prices are crazy. The goods is the big issue there. I had a question on the Fannie Freddie down. Is the MBS volume down, but their overall volume in others, is everything flowing through the cash window? Is that the general consensus?
Well, it's down compared to a year ago, and it's down, let me see, was it down ever so slightly? It was a 1.5% decrease from September. I don't know if it's because more people are going to the cash window. That could be, because we have a lot of, fast-growing non-banks out there that are using the cash window.
It'd be interesting if their volume overall is staying the same, but it's just the MBS prices. They were going up pricing really aggressive for the cash window for a while. So it'd be just interesting to get that data point.
Yeah,
it'd be something to research.
Yeah, who knows? Cash is king, right? And these guys want, let's face it, it's also the year end. They want to make as much money as they can for their shareholders, whether they're private or public, before year end. So it very well could be they're just taking the cash. So it's a good point.
So which is the worst shareholder to have, a bunch of people on Wall Street or your wife if you're a sole proprietorship? So
that might be a hot topic segment for your one of your shows. Who am I worse under, my family and friends owning my company or the public shareholders and the idiot running the hedge fund? I don't know. Put that on your list of shows to do.
We cover that. Go to the Profit Doctor on that one. It's so good to have you with us, Paul. You do a great job. Appreciate you being here. I'm regularly going through this. Again, listeners, if you're not reading it, get it. Get subscribed to it. It's great information. Paul is all over it, like white on rice. Anyway, lots of Texas expressions. So thank you, Paul.
Thank you, David.
Have yourself a great one.
You too.
Bye-bye.
You
appreciate it. Alice Alvey, you did a great job of hosting this. I loved your commentary, and then I loved how you and Joe jumped in last week and were dialoguing with Paul. So it's just, I think you need to host these more regularly. I loved listening to that. As soon as I came out from after my surgery, after coming out from the ether, I sat and listened to it, and I was just smiling from ear to ear while well you guys did. Just great job. Kudos.
Well, thank you. I needed Joe there for sure. So it was a lot of fun, and I'm glad to jump in. But, no, we need you on the show hosting, Dave.
My hosting job isn't
that. I'm the technical person, right? So I'm the one doing the legislative here. And so, which, by the way, Congress isn't doing a whole heck of a lot. But I was surprised, listening to the radio and everybody's talking about what's going to be heard by the Supreme Court today. And MBA Newslink did have the link. I found it at the talk radio news service that, at the Supreme Court today is also hearing the case that the NBA is bringing and has been working on now for years regarding paying overtime to loan officers. So it's interesting to me, one news place picked it up and said this is about as dry can get and who cares. But to me, if I'm a mortgage company or banker, every layer I can get rid of that's costing me overhead is valuable. And so the idea of right now we're in a situation that since 2010, the Department of Labor went back and restored their original position that loan originators cannot be classified as exempt from overtime. And since that time, we've all, as the lenders have all had to track and make sure that they were at least being paid minimum wage. And I think the tough part is, do they work more than 40 hours a week? And does that come out to time and a half? You've got work you have to manage in HR to make sure, especially if the loan officer isn't performing well, that we're also watching this issue as well. Or if a loan officer is more of a salary structure or with a commission mix, maybe you have to be careful on what that compensation is ending up being at the end of the year. So this case is now in front of the Supreme Court, and it's really just about process, not whether or not a loan officer can be exempt or not exempt, but when the Department of Labor made this change in 2010, did they follow the right process? MBA, of course, is arguing on behalf of lenders that they didn't follow the right process, and can we please go back to the previous interpretation that a loan officer can be classified as exempt, and that'll save us a lot of paperwork and grief. Now, on the other hand, the other side of the house on this, the loan officers are arguing, wait a minute, you guys didn't contest it in 2006 when they first brought up making loan officers exempt. You thought that part was fine, and it went through the same process as the 2010 did. So I am not professing to be an attorney here, and I'm certainly, would like to see that, to me, it makes sense an originator should be considered exempt when they're commissioned. But obviously, this is an important thing to watch. So it's just hearing the case today, and we'll have to wait certainly a few weeks before we actually get any kind of court opinion back, and it'll be more about process, and then we'll take it from there. MBA, of course, arguing on behalf of the lenders. So So that's what is news today in terms of loan, you know, loan originator compensation, which always gets our LO's ears listening.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Very, very interesting to see how this one comes out. And it's always interesting who's driving it, especially when the NBA's championing it. So it's going to be fascinating to watch. So you have to bring us a report and out on all of this. You blog and write on that, so people can go to different things that you publish. Where's the best place if they want an update before next week's radio broadcast?
Well, we are. I am going to be more regular at sending out our newsletter. So you can sign up for our MortgageU newsletter at mortgage-u.com, or you can send me an email, alice.alvey@indicom.net. And we'd be happy to make sure that you're included in receiving those updates. And for the rest of my update, we'll be talking about that in our Hot Topics segment with everything going on with Fannie and Freddie.
I'm really looking forward to the Hot Topics segment, get your thoughts on that. So thank you so much, Alice. Good to have you with us. Appreciate you again doing the broadcast last week. So much fun to go back and listen to it. Folks, we're going to be right back after this brief break.
If you have questions about mortgage regulations, Indicom Mortgage U has free answers. If you need ideas about how to reinvent your organization, Indicom Mortgage U will share great ideas. When you need help at any step of the loan process, give us a call or send an email. The Indicom team of experts have been helping mortgage players from origination through servicing for over 30 years. Your success is our focus. Whether it's a quick question or long-term support, portfolio, conventional, or government lending, it's a competitive market. So let Indicom Mortgage U give you the edge.
Well, good to have you back, everybody. Tony Garitano's on the line with us. We always love getting Tony's perspective. And I was listening to, or as I read this article that we're going to be discussing from the Wall Street Journal about mortgage lenders basically set to really relax the standards. What does this mean for the automation world? And so, Tony, good to have you with us. Appreciate you joining in and sharing your thoughts as it relates to everything going on from a technology angle. Good to have you with us, Fred.
Thank you for having me, Dave. I thought it was an interesting article, so we'll see what happens.
What are the implications of something like this as it relates to the technology vendors? I mean, if we relax standards, I mean, how much is just setting in some new standards and how much is hard-coded in this? How much of a challenge could this represent?
Well, I think, to your point, I mean, it depends on how significant the changes are and what technology you're using. Some of the technology can or is more flexible in that it can be manipulated by the end user.
Mm-hmm.
But in most cases, when you're talking about something like, investor guidelines, for example, that would require most technology vendors to do, some kind of an update on their end.
So that was one of the biggest questions I have. When you start looking at the potential of what is out there for updating, there's just a lot of costs that go associated with this. And we look at volume levels have been down. And so how are vendors – someone pulled me aside at a conference and said, Dave, I'm a little concerned about my vendor because volumes are down. They're a SaaS model. And do I need to go with the publicly traded big option out here, or can I stick with this smaller one, which I actually prefer, over the other guys? So thoughts on that?
I think you have to know your vendor, Dave, and it's really more about responsiveness in this case. If you're happy with your vendor and your vendor is responsive to industry change, then there's no reason for you to switch.
Right.
If you're concerned about your vendor's financials and you want to go with a larger company, maybe one that's publicly traded, whatever the case may be, then you need to do some due diligence on their industry responsiveness, and also, what's going to be required for you to make that change, because, as we all know, it's not really easy to, you know, get one system out and put a new one in.
Yeah, this the complexities that go into that now are just crazy. So, absolutely.
Yeah, and you know, especially with all the regulations that have already been incorporated into your existing technology solution, you know, what I'm hearing is that a lot of lenders, you know, are staying put and they're dealing with their current technology solution, whether they like it or not, because there have been so many changes and they know how to use it and they're comfortable with it.
Yeah. Well, it's just a fascinating discussion on what we can see. Is there anything that we go into the close of this year that we should have our listeners be paying particular attention to, Tony, as it relates to the technology world?
You know, I think you might want to, you know, do a regular call-in with your vendor if you don't already and find out what they have planned for 2015. A lot of vendors that I've talked to have been in compliance mode, and their updates have been around regulatory matters. But more and more of them are telling me that they're getting back to their regular schedules in terms of the nice-to-haves versus the must-haves. So
okay.
I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, what those nice-to-haves are for 2015. A lot of vendors are talking to me about electronic signatures, for example.
Really?
So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what are vendors doing with electronic signatures, and are lenders willing to use those signatures on more documents as that becomes something that's even available and accessible as more of the investors and government agencies say, you know, you can do this, Mr. Lender, if you want to.
Wow. There's going to be so much to be staying on top of. I like the thing you said best was get a hold and communicate with your vendors. I mean, you need to get vendor validation done. That's something Andy Shell, the Profit Doctor, did a segment on, but you really should be communicating with them on a regular basis. Find out what they got scheduled. Ask them for updates. I mean, if you're not, shame on you, folks. You've got to be doing that. For that, I'm talking to the business owners that are listening in on the broadcast here. Tony, thank you so much for taking a few minutes to dial in, and I look forward to chatting with you after the broadcast. Got a couple other things I want to run by you, but thank you so much, my friend. Good to have you,
thank
and
you
hope
for
you had
having
a great
me,
Thanksgiving. Always a pleasure.
You as well. I hope you enjoyed it.
Thank you. We will look forward to it. All right. We got the Profit Doctor coming up here shortly, but we're first going to go out to Sam Garcia. And then, you know, we always have the Profit Doctor because he adds the wisdom to it. Now, I know a lot of you saying, well, he hasn't been around a lot. Well, he travels a lot. He has been one busy guy. And so we want to get an update from the accounting conference. So before we go there, let's talk to Sam Garcia. Sam, good to have you with us. How are you doing up there in Dallas? Is it cold up there as it is down here? We moved south to get warm, Sam. What's the deal?
It's kind of crazy. Yesterday, I'm walking around. It's 70-plus degrees. This morning, I wake up, it's 39 degrees. Crazy.
Yeah, I know. It's 42 degrees right here right now. So, it's, yeah, we're a little warmer than you are up there. But what you have on your valuable website, great amount of information here. I'm looking at some of the headlines. But let's run through these for our listeners. The coffee, I mean, you have an article, Coffee Turns Higher. That's an interesting deal. Are you seeing a lot of coffee product or at any coffee product out there? Maybe in California?
You know,
maybe?
That's not necessarily the case, but there's still a lot of loans out there with coffee. And frankly, we see interest in that topic. So we just keep going back to it just because it's something that there's a lot of interest in from probably loan originators mostly.
And you also have a report article on here that you talk about mortgage production report. Give us some insights to that one.
You know, that's basically kind of a roundup of some of the smaller lenders out there. In general, we saw mortgage production pick up in the third quarter. But what's interesting is that at the banks, at FDIC insured banks, the FDIC provided us some data last week that showed that mortgage production at banks was down actually to $157 billion in the third quarter from $164 billion. So that really shows you that it's the smaller guys that are really coming up compared to banks when it comes to doing mortgage loans and mortgage loan originations.
Yeah.
In October, Fannie Mae saw its business acquisition slow 7% from the prior month. But one nice thing is that Fannie continued to have a improving delinquency ratio. 90-day residential delinquency was 1.92%. Hadn't been that low since October 2008. So that's always a good sign, because as long as loans are performing, you get more interest from investors. And even after that, we're just about to publish a story that shows in November, business continued to drop. It was down 14% at Fannie, Freddie, and Ginnie Mae as far as fixed rate mortgage-backed security issuances. And at Fannie, it was actually down 19%. So Fannie led that decline last month in MBS issuance. And then at both Fannie and Freddie, we did a report on refinance activity. FHFA puts out a report mm-hmm. that shows how many loans were refinanced. And we came up with 138,510 loans refinanced that were Fannie and Freddie loans. And that turned out to be the highest level of refinances this year for the GSEs. So that's kind of a positive sign. Yeah, yeah. FHA production, we put out a story on that, and we saw that FHA endorsed 40% fewer loans during its fiscal year, which ended in September, than it did the prior year. So FHA
surprised me.
That one
really surprised me.
So that's kind of the big information on as far as production goes out there. One other thing I noted from the FDIC report was that overall bank employment dropped to 2.0 million from 2.1 million in the second quarter. So they're still trimming their forces across the board there, as they have been actually for the last few years. And, of course, the number of banks were down too.
The one article I want to call everyone's attention to is something that you talk about, the real estate bubble hasn't popped. That caught my attention. But it's one of Andy's old stomping ground, some of Andy's old areas. So, middle of Odessa?
That was an article I did a couple of years ago, and the reason that it seemed relevant to your discussion today was, I talked to local realtors there and some other mortgage professionals and also Texas A&M University, and the consensus was that $70 a barrel was the breaking point where things really start to turn lower for that area. And, what was significant about that area is it's just crazy. Housing costs, just you hear about these ridiculous prices for weekly stay motels and, anything that's available to rent. So, that has a big impact, obviously. The cost of oil has a big impact on that housing market, which was just going bananas. But I have heard that when it comes to fracking, that the number actually, based on the cost of it, is 80 bucks a barrel where it stops making sense. So it's kind of interesting, with OPEC, because they make that move. And, these investments aren't something you do very quickly. It takes a while to actually get it going. So, that could have a long-term negative effect on prices and really push them up down the road.
Yeah, that's my concern is right there. I've read that interesting article on the oil wars. So, Sam, good stuff. And here, folks, check out MortgageDaily.com. Excellent articles of commentary. And you do a great job on the data side as well. A lot of valuable information. Well worth the minimal amount of money it takes to get that subscription to your service. I really appreciate the partnership and relationship with you. Thank you.
I enjoyed being on the show,
Dave.
It's a great show.
Oh, thank you so much. Always fun to have you here too, friend. Appreciate it. Well, let's run over to the Profit Doctor. Always fun to have the doctor in the house. And he's back. He spoke last week at the MBA. Was it a finance conference? What was it that you were speaking at, Andy Show?
Accounting and financial management, Dave.
Woohoo! One of those exciting. I mean, were there thousands upon thousands of people there? Just can't wait to get in? Or was it all the green eye shade, armband guys? Yeah.
Well, that's a metaphor of the past. It's kind of like country music. We're not the old Hank Williams twangy stuff. We're what rock became. So the accountants are very slick looking bunch of folks and very intuitive probably a little bit on the boring side if you listen to the dinner tables about new tax implications, but it was actually a very good conference. It was well attended, lots of folks, standing room only for some of the sessions. It was nice to see the team and see the folks at the MBA there supporting this these topics. So Marina Walsh was there running around making certain everything ran seamlessly, which obviously it did because she's amazing
at
this.
She does a great job.
It was a great conference. Very good conference.
Good.
And,
I know you travel a lot, and I wanted to get some pearls of wisdom from you to share with our listeners. And we appreciate it anytime you can dial in. Our listeners love hearing from you. So what do you have for us today real quickly? Now, I can't wait to get your commentary on the article, on the Wall Street Journal article. So go ahead, shoot.
Well, real quickly, just a follow-on from the conference. And I plan on launching the topic on where do rates come from again, and you know, maybe we even do this as a special topic. I don't know. So it's all covered at once, or do we continue to do it piece by piece? But I want to get back to that, and maybe we can do that in January. But I wanted to just real briefly hit on one of the key topics at the conference was a capital risk impairment as a result of enforcement actions. Now, CFPB enforcement actions, there have been a bunch, and the reason I bring this up is for all of the origination team on the call, there's issues that could be going on in your company that you don't even know about that could significantly impact the company. And for the business owners on the call, you can't pretend like it's not – you can't pretend like it's 2005. The CFPB is here to stay, and they have a lot of significant rules, not the least of which are the third-party management rules and, of course, fair lending, AML and BSA, Bank Secrecy Act, anti-money laundering. And you have to have procedures and process in place to deal with this. And in particular, third-party management, anytime you hire a vendor, if you hired Ellie Mae as your LOS, you have to have in that contract certain provisions about performance standards and termination of the contract as a result of non-performance. But you also can't just go out and make everybody change their contract immediately. So every time you get a new contract, you have to have the CFPB language in there. But if you have an existing contract that doesn't have the language in there, you've got to document that you're on the path to fix it. And the reason I bring this up is because there have been people getting fined badly. I mean, big, big numbers, millions and millions and millions of dollars fines coming out of the CFPB to mortgage companies for things like they didn't manage their vendors correctly, they didn't handle some of the servicing aspects correctly, and they didn't monitor the originator comp correctly. And so it's like this, you know, the monster in the closet that comes out at night. We don't want to be surprised. And so the way that you're not surprised is to proactively comply with the CFPB guidelines. It's an open book test. We know what they're going to look at. We know what they're going to test to make sure it's done right. So let's just do it right the first time, like I've always said, and get in front of this thing. Don't pretend like it's not going to happen and not there. And I guess that's just we still see people surprised about it. At the conference that I was just at where I just spoke, we're talking about something that's been out for 2.5 years. The CFPB's Vendor Management Bulletin came out in March of 2012, and there were people in the audience still surprised by the requirements.
You're kidding.
And
you're kidding.
And if it's I was surprised. I'm glad they're there. That's the point of this conference. I'm glad they're there to get the information. But the cow's out of the barn. You know, it's too. You got to be proactive and deal with it now. I don't want for a great origination group to be surprised when their company gets a CFPB fine. And these things are public, and they name the officers and the owners. This is a big deal.
So
get in front of this thing and do it right. And we'll, you know, give us a call.
Yeah, listen to the broadcast. I mean, there's a lot of things that we have on this broadcast content, and so excellent stuff. Well, I can't wait to get your feedback on the Wall Street Journal article, and I want to get to that just in a minute here, Andy. So thanks so much for joining in with us and joining in that discussion. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success. Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you with us, everybody. There was an article published on this last Friday, November 28th. And it was in the Wall Street Journal, and it's entitled "Mortgage Lenders Set to Relax Standards." And I find that fascinating. And it really came as a result of what was announced by Mel Watts, the acting director of FHFA, at the conference in Las Vegas in October. Now, they're really talking about releasing that. Now, what's interesting about this is it's really getting picked up on by the press. Different ones are really reacting to this. Here we go again. If you look at if you have a subscription to the Wall Street Journal, as I do on the online version, you look down at the bottom here and you look at the commentary to this article. Here we go again. Lending standards are going to be, well, quote unquote, relaxed, heading to another housing crisis. Disaster meltdown. Another one is I just woke up. Is it 2007? So there is a lot of concern out there that, and what people are hearing and what's going on here is two different things. So I wanted to discuss this article. David Stevens, president of the Mortgage Bankers Association of America, emailed this to me over the weekend, says, good article, read it. So I thought, I want to really put this front and center because a lot of commentary is going to be around this today in the news. So, and has been some over the weekend. So I want to get our panelists, regulars are in on this, Alice, Joe, and Andy. And Joe, I'm going to start off with you by going over to you. I think before most of our listeners know this, we have a pre-call as we get ready to launch the broadcast. We're sitting here commenting on this. And I really like some of your commentary that you shared. And then I'm going to run over to Andy, the prophet doctor, and then to Alice. So, Joe, your reaction to this article is what?
David, I'm going to steal some of the stuff that Alice said because she put it better than I did. And that is...
He did put it. We saved some of the best for last, so we put it right.
All right. Well, I think it's a great improvement, and we'll get us closer to rational underwriting decisions, but it's a long, long way from anywhere that's going to create an environment that caused the issues. Oh yeah, it's just a minor movement back on that pendulum, and actually we need more to get us back to a rational level, and it's going to make sense for people to loosen their standards if in fact they have confidence in the reduction in their long-term obligations on those loans. And
right.
I'm not sure everyone's quite trusting of those at this point because we've seen that things, you know, the government basically asked some people to take over some troubled institutions, then fine them billions of dollars for the inappropriate actions of those institutions. So there's still going to be some time necessary to really understand all this before it gets all the way through to the marketplace. But it is a step, first step in the right direction.
That's encouraging to hear. So your initial reaction, Prophet Doctor, to this article?
Well, I think it's very positive. I think it's a good thing to hear that the overlays are being lifted because the big aggregators and the Fannie Freddie have reached some level of a consensus and assurance that the surprise repurchase risk is going to be minimized. And for people to say that we're back in 2007, think about that. 100% LTV subprime borrowers getting teaser rates, NEGAM, prepayment penalty loans still don't exist. So the things that were really bad, this doesn't even touch. All this is doing is making it so that, those things aren't even on the table, and most of them can't be because of Dodd-Frank. So all this is doing is the lenders went too far in protecting themselves because of unforeseen risks, because they don't know what Fannie Freddie is going to identify as a missing piece of documentation in the file that's going to cause them to make Wells Fargo buy the loan back or SunTrust or any of these companies. So this is a step in the right direction. It is so far from being 2007 that it's astounding that someone would even make that comparison. That's just sensationalism to sell newspapers or internet click-throughs or whatever, but I think it's a great first step.
Alice, what about QM, ATR, all of this? I mean, it's good for our industry. I mean, we're in the business of making loans in the defense sense, to the extent that we can do so with a greater degree, or at least a perceived degree of comfort and confidence that we're not going to have to buy back some of the industry is not going to have to buy back some of the stuff because of the relaxed standards. But talk to our listeners about this from a compliance angle. Is this one of those things where they're actually being set up? Joe alluded to this. Both Andy and Joe alluded to their comments. Is they get sucked into doing things, and the federal government comes back and sticks it to them when things didn't work out quite as everyone originally thought, and billions of dollars of fines have been paid by lenders who went off and did things, even were strongly encouraged, mandated in some cases. So, your thoughts, Alice, from a compliance standpoint.
Well, I do think for folks who haven't necessarily read all the Fannie Freddie announcements, the main one is in Fannie's version is announcement 1414 that came out November 20th and then gave us some detail. So I guess the protections that everyone's talking about that they're hoping the big shops will open up to your question about the ATRQM is that at least in this announcement, it says they will not issue a repurchase request based on violations of the ability to repay provision under TILA unless there was a court or regulator concluded that it didn't comply. So if I'm looking at my shop, I'm saying I'm a mid-sized lender, even large, any shop, I've been concerned if I calculated income incorrectly and Fannie Mae didn't audit and came up with a DTI 2% too high and invalidated my DU findings, could Fannie Mae take an action that, wait a minute, we're not supposed to buy a non-ATR loan, and so you're going to have to repurchase this. And would this be an exemption from, even after the customer maybe paid their loan on time for 3 years? So that was good clarity, right? I think that's the whole point here, is we get clarity with these announcements to help really understand what would be an exclusion. When could I still potentially have risk long after my 3-year life of loan rep and warranty protection that I now have? I now have that if my customer paid their payments on time for 3 years, I'm not in as a precarious of state. Certainly, fraud is still out there, or repeat offenses, and so Fannie also defines all that. So to me, on the ATR and the compliance side, it helps me feel like at least I have some better definitions for what could be a repurchase, even if the loan was still performing. So that's my two cents to start with anyway.
We see so much forensic underwriting that goes on. That's the term we use when if you want to get someone to repurchase things. So we're out there, Fannie and Freddie are saying, we're relaxing standards, but in the event that something goes wrong, that loan goes delinquent, there are so many ways they can come back. Is there anything that you read in this article or that you heard when Mel Watts spoke about this at the annual conference in October in Las Vegas? Is there anything in here that really creates a comfort zone? It's kind of like I always heard that expression that was used years, decades ago with the Indians, is don't trust the white man in Washington, D.C. I mean, I get a little concerned about the lenders that are going into this saying, okay, we can relax our standards, but then as soon as the loans delinquencies start going up, inching up, or if anyone's their compare ratio goes up, they're going to find other areas in which they're going to go to the forensic underwriting, and here's where you messed up. And so there's that gotcha thing there. Concerns about that?
I think there are definitely companies out there that are going to say, you know what, I got burned once or twice, and I'm not going to fall for the story again. There's definitely going to be companies out there that are going to be very cautious and not jump on this. One thing that I think is interesting is just the discussion on the compliance side is that, you know, Fannie and Freddie, there's some statements in here everybody needs to pay attention to in terms of the Fair Housing Act, anti-discrimination
right.
provisions under ECOA, UDAAP, and just making sure that, you know, realizing that Fannie and Freddie will be watching for those issues as well, whereas normally they're not necessarily going to say you've got to buy this loan back because your TIL's out of compliance. You know, your TIL was beyond
right.
an eighth. I think companies are going to be cautious still.
Yeah, I think there's that overriding cautious, Joe, when you sit and look at this thing is the caution that's just generally in the market, which really goes to the thing. What they're trying to do with this is by lowering credit standards or easing credit standards, however you want to characterize it, they are going to draw more lenders into making more loans to people on a broader range. And, you know, I just look at this. I think lenders are leery. When you have the CFPB out there, I just get the feeling that so many are going to be leery about moving forward with this. So I think this is, in my opinion, and I'm going to you for your commentary on this, but I think this is going to, it's more about headlines than actually going to be a substantive move to looser standards. Your thoughts, John?
I think there'll be a lot more loans made because we had gone way
right.
too far. And I guess a great example is I bet Ben Bernanke can get his loan now. Under the improved underwriting, but you know it's just trying to bring a little rationality back in, and I think there's going to be a license from the underwriting perspective to use a little more rational underwriting without the overriding fear of that long term repurchase obligation.
I think that you hit the nail on the head there, Joe, where people were over-documenting, right? If you had a gift, you had to have 15 pieces of paper, and now the consensus is, well, maybe now I'm not going to have that level of risk for crazy levels of documentation. So that's why the folks who think, you know, the sky is falling, we're back to 2007, my analogy before was we took 100 steps to conservative on lending, and all this does is help us take maybe 10 or 20 steps back to normal. We're not even back to, halfway back to where we were before.
Well, Alice, to that point, aren't we at normal? I mean, how far off are we? You and I have been underwriters and been in business as all of us, everyone of us on the radio. You and I sat in underwriting chairs and underwrite loans in the 70s and 80s. We saw loans that the underwriting guidelines back then. Is it really? Are we that much tighter than those days, really?
I guess that's a tough question to answer because everything, you know, the two most common words used by an underwriter are that depends, right? So it kind of, if I try and elevate to kind of, what does most companies, I think some companies get surprised by what DU and LP approve, especially for FHA loans. So
I mean, on the positive side, when you say that they're surprised, they're not because they're being turned down, they're being proved.
Right. Go ahead.
And so that's my thinking is one of the arguments I've had is, first of all, I don't think lenders are going to be getting out there. I hope so. I hope Joe's right because we could see some more activity. It's going to be good for our industry. And to the extent there's not genuine repurchase risk connected with it, that's good. But I keep coming back to this. I keep getting asked this when I'm on national television and getting grilled on these issues. Credit standards are so tight. And I'm going, really? I don't think so, because I'm looking at where I was at in the 70s and 80s and where I was started out in this industry, and it doesn't seem like – I think we're back to that, and I wondered if we just set the bar so low for that period of insanity, which was going on in the 2000, from 2003 through 2007, if we just created a new level of a low bar insanity that by which everything is now judged and compared to.
Well, Dave, let me agree with you and disagree with you at the same time. How's that?
No, you do that always.
There
so
goes
you
that
do that so well.
Yeah, it all depends.
That's an accountant way of saying it depends, Alice. Yeah, go ahead, Andy.
Okay, first off, I agree with you that it is looser today, even today, than it was back then, because back then we had 36 done. That was all there was, and we're past that. But we're past that. Here's the disagreement. We're past that because we now have more data. We have more data analyzed. We have credit scores that really measure the way that people's payment patterns exist. So it's not just about the ratios. It's about how you manage your money and how you spend your money. So that's why I think the credit score helps. A really good credit score will help to offset that higher total or mortgage DTIs. So there you go. Yes, it's looser because it's not 2836, but it's better because it's credit score based.
Very good. Good discussion. I like that. You know what? Prophet Doctor, good to have you back on, bringing that in. Alice, Joe, I appreciate both of your comments. Joe, real quick, where's the markets at? Give our listeners a quick update.
Yeah, we're down near the low of the day. Yeah.
Yeah.
So be concerned about unfavorable price changes.
Well, thank you all for being here with me again. So good to have the roundtable discussion. Always, people, our listeners love it, and we appreciate you listeners tuning in. Be sure to come back next week as we'll be talking more about a lot of the headline issues. We get so many requests for the roundtable discussion. That's what we're going to be doing again next week. Talk to you soon. See you back here next week.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.